right, welcome to another episode of Piecing It Together, the podcast where we take a look at a new movie and try to figure out what movies inspired it. And today on the show, it is time to get the family back together so we could talk about F9, the latest in the Fast and Furious series. And joining me, as he promised he would, it's Joe Black. He has been on the show a bunch in the past. I'm sure you've heard an episode with him at some point. And he is a major fan of these movies and has been saying that he wanted to be on whatever the next one would be. And honestly, other than Hobbs and Shaw, I haven't gotten a chance to cover any other Fast and Furious movies. So I am very happy to finally be covering a official main series entry of this crazy, ridiculous, over-the-top series, because I love these movies, even though this one, not so good. But we'll get into that in the conversation. Before we do get to it, I do want to remind you, as always, to make sure you're subscribed to Piecing It Together wherever you listen to podcasts. You can, of course, also follow us on social media at Piecing Pod and join our Facebook group, Popcorn and Puzzle Pieces, where we continue the conversation about all the movies we talk about here on the show. Also, don't forget, if you enjoy what you hear on the show, make sure to share it with your friends. But also, you can go rate and review us over on Apple Podcasts or Podchaser. We really appreciate all of the feedback, and also, you know, all those stars, they help, apparently. So do that. That would be awesome if you did that. But just listening makes you the best, and thank you so much for listening. So let's get into this conversation. It's a long one. We got a lot of stuff to say about this movie. So we also rank the Fast and Furious movies at the end of the conversation. So we got a lot to get into. So let's get to it. Let's talk about F9. All right, Joe Black is back with us today. It hasn't been that long since the last time we got you on for Godzilla vs. Kong, and now you're back for this gigantic spectacle that we're going to be talking about today. Joe, how's it going?
Doing okay. I'm trying not to earn a reputation as your non-comic book summer blockbuster guy. So, last movie I'm on here for that had a budget of $200 million or over. No more of that.
Right. Well, these movies did save cinema, so that's important to note at the top of this conversation. But this is going to be a little all over the place. I mean, regardless of whether or not F9, the Fast Saga, if that's what we're going with as the title, is a good movie or not, and we'll get into our thoughts on that along the way. Even if this was amazing, best in the series, this still would have been a weird episode, I think, because it's the 9th in a series, and I mean, really 10th if you count the spinoff, and that makes it kind of its own thing that's a little bit different, I think, from any other episode we've done.
Right. Yeah, I mean, you say 10th if you count the spinoff. I could also argue that it's only the 8th if you count Tokyo Drift as a spinoff, which I think they regret.
True.
You know what I mean? True. Like, because they're doing two more, you know, 10 and 11 theoretically, and I assume that's only to like make like the saga of the team itself a complete idea.
Yeah,
but that's okay. I mean, honestly, Fate of the Furious was almost the perfect ending to the series, so anything after this
is
like
true.
Almost like the coda. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Coda of the Furious.
Yeah.
So, we'll get into some puzzle pieces. We discussed ahead of time for everyone listening at home that we're also going to do a quick ranking of the series since we've gotten to this point here. And also just kind of talk about a little bit of what worked and what didn't. Like I said, this is going to be a weird episode. I only have a few actual pieces, but I've got a lot of notes and a lot of thoughts. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure we'll have plenty to talk about. I think let's start it off, though, just because it's what we're here to do. Let's talk puzzle pieces first, and then we'll get to our ranking later, and along the way, just all the other thoughts that we have. So let's start off with puzzle pieces. What do you have for your first puzzle piece for F9?
Okay, my first puzzle piece has been the Disney Star Wars movies.
Okay.
Because when those first popped up, they were nothing but fan service and unnecessary backstory. Like the first Force Awakens, still in my opinion the worst movie of the whole Star Wars universe, was nothing but callbacks and references and fan service. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
It was damage control, but like in the most like insulting way. And then you got Rogue One, which was like better. You know what I mean? It was a handsome mm-hmm. movie. It was a very well-made movie, but it was still sure. just kind of like, yeah, I know. Like, this doesn't change anything. This doesn't right, do right. anything for the saga. And one thing about the Fast and the Furious movies that I've loved so much is that they keep, God, what a horrible pun. They keep reinventing the wheel. Like, they really do. Like they don't, you know, like, everybody talks about what a huge shift 5 was from the franchise, but it's like, not really. Like, not really.
Because
yeah, like,
every single one of them has been a huge shift along the way.
Right. I mean, you look at 1 and 2, and it's like night and day. And then you look at 3, yeah. and it, you know, is its own thing. 4, again, they're all different. 5 and 6 are the only two, really, that are pretty similar. You know what I mean? They mm-hmm. feel like companion pieces. But, like, yeah. they just keep, like, going deeper and creating a bigger universe and not just like bigger, more ridiculous things, but enriching what we're experiencing, you know? And yeah. this is the first one where it's just like, remember Shea Whigham? And then most mm-hmm. of the audience is like, no. You know, remember Lucas Black from the third one, which is only supposed to be a couple years ago, but he looks 20 years older and sick? Yeah, there he is. You know, and even the whole thing of them going to space, it's like that's been the joke for like 5 years now. You know, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? It's nothing but fan service. And no offense to fans, but we're idiots. We don't know what we want. That's why we go to right. movies, you know?
Sure.
And I will say, though, that the one thing that works in this movie, the one thing, actually, is them going to space.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that's the one thing in the movie that I was like, that's really nice. Like, yeah. like I yeah. like where they took that, you know? Everything else, just dud after dud after dud after dud, story-wise. But
it was also smart that it was those two characters who go to space, because that just keeps it as fun as it needs to be. It you know, Vin going to space would just be, it would be too stupid, you know? I mean, right. there's a lot of stupid in the movie, but it would just be too stupid.
Yeah, no, you have to have the two, like, most ridiculous characters be the ones who actually attempt it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, Tej yeah. makes a lot of sense because he's the rocket, he's the Donatello. You know yeah, what I mean?
Sure.
But Roman is the only one dumb enough to be like, I could pilot a space Pontiac, you know?
Yeah, after screaming about what the hell are we doing for like 5 minutes, and he's just like, I'm in, done.
Yeah, you know, and having him do that after facing his fears in 7, you know, that's a cute little throwback, you know what I mean? Of getting yeah. yanked out of the airplane, but
for sure.
A movie that, like, just, you know, I remember seeing the trailer for this a year ago, and I was like, holy shit, Dom has a brother, holy shit, they're bringing Han back, how are they going to make those things work? And the answer is they don't. Like, they don't work. Right. Like, and yeah. they don't do anything. Han comes yeah. back. That's all. He doesn't do anything. Jacob is sure. Dom's brother. That's all. You know? Mm-hmm. And he's poorly acted. But but them going to space was like the one thing. And I think that's kind of cool. I think that it's kind of mm-hmm. cool that Justin Lin, that's the one thing that kind of, even though it's fan service, it's the one thing that's like the most least ridiculous thing that they do in this movie. And there's also right, like, right. there is kind of a beautiful moment where you see Earth in their helmets in a way, you know mm-hmm. what I mean? Like, he takes it totally serious, which is, and it's that sincerity that made the franchise what it was. So for like yeah, a little yeah. half blip, 2.5 hours into the movie, like, I was like, oh, there's still a pulse.
Yeah, there's still something here for sure. Well, I'm going to take your Star Wars puzzle piece and jump right on top of that, because I have a Star Wars puzzle piece myself here. I'm going to go with Star Wars The Rise of Skywalker, the most mm-hmm. recent one, specifically the moment in the movie where Chewie dies and then it's revealed that he's actually on the other transport and he didn't die, which is awful, you know, but it proves that there's absolutely no stakes in any of this. And right. I think that that's the biggest problem with this entry in the film, is that they have entered that territory of, you know, none of this matters. You know, we're just mm-hmm. going to make these movies. We'll do whatever the hell we want with them, and don't get too invested in any of it, because we could just change it at any moment, and nothing really matters that you're seeing on the screen at any given time. You know, aside from that, also, since we are talking about Star Wars, I did have fun with this movie. I mean, it's lower tier when we get to the rankings later. But I will say, possibly the worst scene in the entire franchise, maybe any blockbuster action movie, is Charlize Theron giving those Star Wars insults.
All for that button at the end, no pun intended.
Yes.
All for that button at the end, which the button itself is kind of cute, but like the guy just like, it's like he names every popular Star Wars thing in 5 seconds. And it's just like, I don't know. I don't even believe that guy's seen Star Wars. I don't know.
Right. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. The most unbelievable thing in the Fast and Furious 9 is that that guy has seen Star Wars.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
You know, to that whole no stakes thing, that's what happens when all you're obviously trying to do is please fans, right?
Right,
like,
right.
Like, when Michelle Rodriguez, when they showed her picture at the end of F5, like, okay, I do need to say that I've been a fan of this franchise from minute one. I had, me and my buddies saw the first one. It was a game changer. Nobody wanted to see the second one with me because it didn't have Dom. I was like, fuck it. I loved it. Then three, I convinced one buddy of mine to go see it. You know what I mean? Like, I've been there from minute one, true and true. So when Michelle Rodriguez's picture gets laid down at the end of five, I leapt out of my seat. You know, and I was like, yes, bring Letty back. And Han, you know, in three, Han, people have a bit of rose-colored lenses for three, in my opinion. Like, some people claim it their favorite. I'm like, you're remembering it wrong. But, like, Han is the best thing about it. And Han became one of the best characters, you know?
Right.
So, like, bringing him back, you know, like, I get the incentive to do it. But it doesn't, it's a disservice, in a way, to the character. You know what I mean? Like, Han was like, that changed everything for them, losing Han. Even Giselle dying. It's like, yeah, well, you know, whatever. She came on once. But like Han was a big fucking deal. Like, and to lose him meant something. And bringing him back, you know, they all say justice for Han. And the only reason I could think of needing justice is to justify the fact that they made Shaw a good guy. You know, like I can just picture Justin Lin sitting there watching 8 and being like, come on, he killed my boy. You know, like.
Right, right.
So, like, I get that, but, like, and he doesn't do anything. I don't remember if Chewbacca does anything when he comes back.
That's a good question. I don't recall him actually doing anything important, but, I mean, he's there at the end, and that's all anybody really wanted.
He gets the medal.
Yeah.
He gets the medal randomly. Like, not even in an actual ceremony. They didn't even put in the effort to give an actual ceremony where he could get a fucking medal.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, that's the big problem with this movie, too, is I do want to give it a slight kind of like, well, Justin Lin was coming back and needed to get his feet wet again. You know what I mean? This movie's just as slight as fucking Tokyo Drift was, you know? And I do want to say, I've seen it twice now. The first time I was ready to write it off as like Hobbs and Shaw awful. But watching it the other night on the actual release night was fine.
Yeah. Fine's fine.
Yeah, I mean, I actually give a movie a pass as long as we all can agree that, like, it fucked up. You know what I mean? Like, I remember, like, when Die Hard 5 came out, everybody was talking shit about it. I'm like, why? I mean, we all know it sucks. There's nothing to say. You know, so like nobody who, even the people who liked Rise of Skywalker, like defending it, you know, like there was horses on a spaceship, you know, like that's cool. You know, same thing with this. It's like, you know, they do the George of the Jungle thing. That's cool.
There's a lot of moments in this movie I really did enjoy, but yeah, it's just a mess though. But let's get on to some more puzzle pieces.
Yes,
we'll get into some of these other things along the way. But what do you got for your next piece?
My next piece is the worst of the James Bond franchise, in my opinion, Spectre.
Okay.
And I know that's saying a lot because there are some really bad James Bond movies. But Spectre is kind of an offensive one in a way. So after Skyfall, I mean, they kind of really, you know, when Daniel Craig came on board, they tried to shift into a more serious, action-y kind of Jason Bourne type Bond movie. It was like a huge shift. And in my opinion, they were moderately successful. I know everybody went apeshit for it, but they were moderately successful. And then after Skyfall, where they literally whittled James Bond down to the bare bones and turned it into like grown up Home Alone at the end. Like it was, we're in a whole different franchise at this point, you know? Mm-hmm. Then Spectre comes along and Spectre kind of tries to be both a Roger Moore James Bond movie and the new Daniel Craig ones, like simultaneously. Mm-hmm. And I felt that a little bit with F9, where it was like, where, you know, after 6, it really got ridiculous.
Sure.
Like, to me, 7 is a little too much in the insane direction. And I feel like 8 is arguably the most insane, but all the pieces fit perfectly. Like, right. In comparing this to the James Bond franchise, I would say that 8 is like The Spy Who Loved Me. Like, the best of the Roger Moore ones. You know what I mean? This one, though, kind of tries to, like, course correct to back to, like, the 5-6 kind of territory.
Sure.
And in doing so, I think kind of, you know, hurts itself because you can't course correct by taking a step backwards.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what this movie did. You know, it's a step backwards in a lot of ways. Like, it's been the thing for the last few movies. Hey, let's reveal a new, you know, interesting actor to throw in. With 5, you've got The Rock. And then you've got, you know, in 7, you've got, like, Jason Statham. Then 8, you've got Charlize Theron and Helen Mirren. And this one, you've got John Cena. Like, face plant. Just a dud.
And it seems like they know that, too, based on the ending. Like, it seems like they were just like, let's just have him drive off because that's the best we got.
Well, yeah, but I mean, like they knew that when they fucking released the original trailer, which is another thing I want to get into, that my biggest problem with the whole movie is actually the trailer.
Yeah.
Because from a story standpoint, you got nothing. You got nothing worth selling us on. As much as people like to give these movies shit, 6, you've got Letty coming back. Oh, man, that's a big deal, right? You know what I mean? In 7, you've got the revenge, you know, breaking the team apart, and you open it up to, like, them becoming, like, actual super spies, right? In 8, you've got Dom has turned evil, and he works against the team for the sake of his son. Like, there's things going on. There are reasons for these movies to exist. This one, there's none.
Mm.
And much like Spectre, what's his name, being his brother, much like Blofeld being James Bond's kind of brother, it's like, that doesn't matter. Who gives a shit? And at least Spectre had the balls to keep Blofeld his nemesis.
Yeah.
You know, if you're going to bring in evil Dom that we've never met before, like, he has to stay the arch enemy at the end. You can't pull the same card that you pulled with Michelle Rodriguez without her memory, Jason Statham, The Rock even. You can't pull this card again.
Yeah.
You know,
even Vin Diesel himself in 8.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Oh, man. 8. Dude, I saw 8 again in a theater on Monday. Mm-hmm. And like, it was in the shittiest theater that AMC could offer with terrible projection. And I just watched it a month ago. And it, dude, 9 has nothing on 8.
Yeah.
Like nothing. It does not improve in any way except cinematography.
Mm-hmm.
Much like Spectre, the only thing worth a shit in this movie is that it is a gorgeous looking movie.
Yeah.
But I feel like that's a detachment. I feel like he's not really interested anymore in a way in what's going on. He just wants to have fun, which is also a death rattle for a franchise, much like Spectre. But again, at least Spectre had the audacity to like not give away everything in the trailer. You know what I mean? They didn't give away that it was Blofeld even. They didn't give away that it was his brother. They, you know, and they don't give away all the best action set pieces like this trailer did.
Right.
I might have enjoyed F9 the first time a little bit, despite the terrible story, if I didn't know they were going to swing from the fucking bridge, if I didn't know that they were going to have magnet cars, if I didn't know that they were going to go to space, all, you know, but they gave me all of it in the trailer.
Yeah. Every single beat. And yeah, I completely agree with you about that trailer. It's, it gave all the important things and none of, you know, anything other than this is a Fast and Furious movie for you to actually want to see it. So it like doesn't even work as a trailer to begin with. But
right. The movie has no story and doesn't change anything for the crew. Right. So like all you have at that point is spectacle that you can enjoy about it. And they knew that and they got worried and they gave away all the spectacle as well.
Yeah. Well, to your original puzzle piece, I don't like Spectre either, but Skyfall is great though. So
Skyfall, I like the second half of Skyfall, which I know a lot of James Bond people don't like, you know, but that's fine. I mean, I'm the asshole who my favorite James Bond movie is License to Kill, you know. but Spectre, it's funny. Spectre, from a story standpoint, is written better, but mm-hmm. still is a worse movie than F9. Yeah. Like, you know, it really is. Like, F9 just makes so many, like, obvious mistakes that it's confusing. Like, even doing the flashbacks, which nobody wanted. We came to see Fast and the Furious with Vin Diesel as Dom. Is that Vin Diesel's son or something? Like, whoever played young Dom, garbage.
I actually joked on Twitter that F9 is the only movie in history that would have benefited from de-aging CGI.
Like, I agree.
It would have worked so much better.
Like to my Star Wars Disney piece, you know, nobody wanted to go see somebody other than Harrison Ford play Han Solo. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And you can't just like spring that shit on me at the beginning of the new F9. I have to prepare myself for a non-Vin Diesel Dom. Yeah. But even having Jacob be the one who was going to beat the dude to death with the wrench, you know, we all know that story, right? Like that Dom beat the guy to death with almost to death. He's now a high school janitor with the wrench. We all know that story. But like having Jacob take that wrench first, you're like, oh shit. Like, does that change it all along that Dom stopped Jacob and did it? You know what I mean? Or something? No.
No.
He stopped Jacob, but then he just got mad later and did it himself. And it's like, well, that's stupid.
Yeah.
You had an opportunity to change how I saw the franchise, and now, you know, and you just didn't do it.
So the backstory stuff is just the worst. It's just the worst parts of this movie.
I remembered it being much more in the movie. Like when I saw it the first time, I was telling people afterwards, like, a third of it's flashbacks. Mm-hmm. And my buddy who was also there that night that I saw it was like, it's not a third. And I'm like, yes, it is. And then I saw it again. I'm like, oh, he's right. It's like 20 minutes.
I'm going with a third. I agree with the original.
It takes up a third of my hatred. How's that?
Well, I'll go to another piece here, and I am going to go with the Sharknado sequels, because this movie 100% understands what we all, maybe not you, Joe, because you you dig deep here, but what most of us laugh about with this series, what, you know, what we all, our little jokes and, you know, all of the things that it's come to be known for. And it just goes directly for that without, you know, any reason for any of those jokes, any, you know, consideration for what that means for the overall story. And honestly, it kind of hurts watching it because I can't imagine Vin Diesel is happy about that. I just can't imagine, like, he's got this huge series. It really is like one of the most successful series of all time, which is completely insane because it's such a ridiculous set of movies. But, you know, he's got to have a little bit of pride in that. And the fact that they're now just kind of digging into fan theories and fan inside jokes and things like that, and using that for the basis of where to go with it. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine he likes that.
Yeah, I mean, like that. I mean, I don't want to, you know, he seemed happy with himself. I should say that I went to a screening of it a week before it came out, a fans only screening that I invited David to, but he wouldn't take the 4-hour trip.
You did
trip.
Invite me, and thank you for that, Joe.
Well, I'll tell you, you missed out on, I live in LA. I've been to a lot of these events. It was by far the worst, most horribly organized event I've ever been to. And they had us waiting in this, like, in the sun, like in the middle of the day at the City Walk, no shade, in these little, like, in like a cattle herd of sorts. And like Vin Diesel and crew were like late showing up, so we were out there for an extra like 45 minutes. And dude, the MC, she obviously had never seen any Fast and the Furious movie, so like she's trying to MC this whole thing. She's like, how many F9 fans we got out there? And everyone's cheering, and I'm just like, we haven't seen it yet, you know. And, you know, and then she calls out like the actors. She's like, welcome, Jordana Webster. And I was like, ooh, 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 ooh. And she kept like introducing Vin Diesel. And from where I was standing, I could see the stagehand off to the side, just like, you know, crossing his neck, like, keep going. He's not here. He's not here. Like, she kept introducing him. And when he finally came out, he's like, this is for you guys. And he did like the heart shape with his hands a little bit. And then that was it. And that's when I knew that we were in for nothing.
Yeah.
Like when I knew that this was nothing but fan service, this movie. Right. You know, and I tried to chalk up the movie sucking to my experience that day, but no, it just, a lot more went wrong that day. But that movie just, no, it stinks. But like you said, it's just fan service. And that's the not just a bad thing to do in general as a creator, but it's also the antithesis of what made this franchise what it is.
Right, right.
You know what I mean? Like surprising us, twists, enriching, deepening, you know, like that's what this franchise actually does every time it comes out.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And this is the first time where it felt like, oh, we need a new one, you know?
Right.
Happens to everything.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Well, do you have any other puzzle pieces?
I have one more. I mean, I have, is it Chad who does like the mini pieces that he does?
Yeah, he'll, like, he'll always like, because he always comes to these things with like 20, 30 pieces, so.
Yeah, that's, I mean, that's fine. I mean, I had a couple like that. Like I had like the candy bar wrappers, which that joke got me both times. The candy bar wrappers in the Space Pontiac.
Yeah, yeah.
That I'd forgotten it the second time and it made me laugh. And that, you know, that made me think of The Simpsons with the chips.
Okay,
when Homer opens the chips in space. And then like you've got like the bridge sequence reminded me of this really wonderful film, Sorcerer. Have you ever seen that film?
No, I've never seen that.
Have you heard of it?
I think so.
It's your boy's Tangerine Dream did the score for
Yes.
Yeah, it's a William Friedkin movie from the 70s.
That's what I thought, yeah.
There's this sequence involving a truck that has to go across this bridge that is collapsing in the middle of a horrible storm.
Mm.
And, you know, 10 years before I even saw the movie, you know, film people, you know about the bridge scene in Sorcerer. It's like a thing. And usually, like, that kind of thing, by the time you see it, you're like, that's what they were talking about. You know what I mean?
Mm.
Like the chase scene in Bullet. You know, you've heard about it your whole life. If you ever see it, you're like, oh, cute,
yeah,
I guess. Right. But this scene, when I finally saw the bridge scene in Sorcerer, I was like, holy shit.
Yeah.
You know, like, holy cannoli. And if they had not shown it to me 75 times in the trailer, the bridge scene in this, both beats of it, them driving along the bridge as it's collapsing, followed by the George of the Jungle vine swing, would have been so dope. But
yeah,
but the only legit piece that I had left was Pulp Fiction.
Okay. Well, I want to hear this.
But yeah. There's a running thread in this movie where Roman, at the beginning of the film, when they're in their first mission, he is in a hole and he literally gets surrounded by like 15 guys with machine guns and he has one machine gun and he's able to take them all out.
Yeah.
And which is followed by a brilliant sequence where we think that Roman's about to land on a landmine. And again, if I didn't know that they were going to fucking space, I genuinely would have been on the edge of my seat like, oh my God, are they about to kill off Roman?
Right,
like,
right.
Are we about to lose him? But because I've seen the trailer, I know that that's not the case. But so Roman, after that happens, starts to question, like, is there something like divine about us? Like, are we invincible? Are much like Jules in Pulp Fiction. And Roman actually has this kind of existential arc where he like, you know what I mean? Like much like the transformation that Jules has. And at the end of the film, Roman becomes the voice of reason, even to Tej when they're going to space, much like, you know, Jules in Pulp Fiction. And, you know, I will say that this, like the eighth one, it's nice to see Roman actually have something to do in these movies, because usually he's just the wisecracker. But I will say, if the best thing about your Fast and the Furious movie is Roman, you really fucked up. And he definitely is the best thing about this movie. So,
well, I'm so glad you brought Pulp Fiction up then, because I think that's what I was trying to think of. I was trying to think of a movie where someone is like, you know, I can't die. It's the only explanation. And I think that that's it.
Yeah, I mean, it's I almost thought of Surf Ninjas, kind of, because Rob Schneider's character has that whole thing where he's like, what if, you know, like, this happens, and it always does, so he thinks he has that magic power, and he's protected because of it. I almost thought of Surf Ninjas. I changed my answer to Surf Ninjas. You can have Pulp
there
Fiction.
I'll take Pulp Fiction. You take Surf Ninjas. I like it. Awesome. I'll throw in a couple mini ones like that too. The Roman and Tej in space reminded me of the end of Independence Day. The two of them just kind of, you know, totally.
I got
out of
to
control.
Get me one of these.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. they should die by all means, and they have no idea what they're doing, but they survive, of course. And then lastly, the whole, you know, glowing magnetic MacGuffin two pieces and the key needed. is just essentially every single recent superhero movie. They all have multiple parts that all need to be plugged together in some, you know, crazy thing like that.
Just pathetic across the board, you know. And here's the thing. Since 6, each Fast and the Furious movie has had the same MacGuffin plot.
Yeah.
Super villain wants the thing to control the world's military or whatever, right? Yeah. Like that's the goal every movie. And you want to know something? I didn't notice until this one. Right. like you know, that's the movie's biggest sin, is that this is the first one where I start going, "Oh, come on."
You're right.
You know what I mean? Like even the big swing, the big swinging car rope thing was awesome. But then when they hit the fucking side of the cliff and roll, I'm like, come on. Like, right. You've got me questioning the logic of these movies now. Man, you've really fucked up.
Yeah, the fact that they were able to keep you before, but now it's a problem.
For 20 years. Like, they do all sorts of little callbacks to the others too, but like the stuff that didn't make sense in those either, like when Letty gets hit in the air at the beginning on her motorcycle and she flies and Vin Diesel catches her with the car. I'm like, that doesn't work.
That was fantastic. But again, it's in the trailer. So,
right. Exactly. Yeah. Like, yeah. I mean, you know, Han coming back again, he does nothing except have some weird adopted daughter. I'm like, you're playing that card too. And she does nothing either. But like, so if you're not going to do anything with them, then all you've got is the reveal, and you put the reveal in the trailer. Like,
yeah,
if you didn't know that he was coming back, wouldn't you have like lost your mind?
Sure.
Wouldn't you have been like, oh my God? Yeah. Like, and at least you would have had the high of that, but they don't even let you have that high. You know?
Yeah.
It's so weird. They're like, we have nothing, so give them everything to get them there. And it's like, what a stupid philosophy.
Well, let's do the finish puzzle here. We'll get into some closing thoughts, then we'll get to our rankings. But finish puzzle includes basically the Star Wars saga, and we talked a bunch about Rise of Skywalker.
Disney Star Wars saga.
Yes, that's true. Specifically, the Disney trilogy. So Spectre, Sharknado, Simpsons, Sorcerer, Pulp Fiction, Independence Day. What a just mishmash of puzzle pieces.
Surf Ninjas.
Here. Oh, of course, Surf Ninjas. Ew. How could I forget?
How could you forget? Sorry. I got a lot of S's on mine this time. Simpsons, Surf Ninjas, Spectre, Star Wars. Holy Sorcerer. Exciting. What the hell happened?
What I got is one going
P.
On here?
I had one P in there and I gave it to you. Amazing. That's funny.
Well, are there any like main points within this movie that you wanted to get to that we didn't quite get to with the puzzle pieces?
I guess my main point that I would like to make just in general is they did things like you talked about, fan service. Like, but actually it's a huge disservice, because there's a weird, people have a strong reaction to these movies, to not liking these movies. And these are mostly the people who either haven't seen them and, or are, I know this is going to sound ridiculous, jealous of the fact that they don't understand them. Like,
sure.
This is not something, like, they try to write this franchise off all the time. Like, with like, oh, it's so ridiculous, that could never happen. Oh, like, Vin Diesel can't act. Oh, blah, 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 blah. Like, that whole thing, like, with where he said Fellini-esque and everybody is making fun of him. But,
right,
like,
right.
Actually, folks, Vin Diesel can act. You know what I mean? Like, these are the same people, like, who were saying Stallone couldn't act back in the 80s and now talk about how he was a genius and nobody appreciated it. It's the same shit. But what sets this franchise apart is the fact that it actually does have something to offer every time it comes out. And what it's rooted in is not its spectacle. What it's rooted in is how much you love these characters. And the reason you love these characters is their commitment to the base moral values of like traditional America. You know, most of these characters are immigrants. They believe in family. They are a religious family. Each one ends with prayer. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, they pay their respects to the dead every time, much to, like, this was the one time where I'm like, you gotta just let Brian not be in them. He's just gotta not be talked about.
I will say that not, like, having an actor, like, was a strange amount of restraint for this movie. Like, you know?
Sure. That's fair.
Seriously.
That's fair. But again, like these are, that's why people love these films. And honestly, The Marvel franchise doesn't have that. It never did. Most of the Marvel characters, aside from Captain America, are all selfish pricks who make stupid decisions. The Star Wars franchise, the Disney one, that doesn't have that shit in it. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, you can't name any other franchise that has the same values and perspective as these films. And the reason why The Rock was actually not good for the franchise was because after the sixth one, he was just playing The Rock. Mm-hmm. And that's not what these movies are about. It's not about a persona. Vin Diesel, when he was talking to The Rock about his performances and that thing, he's talking about the sincerity at which you play it. Mm-hmm. You are not Dwayne The Rock Johnson. You are Hobbs. You know what I mean? Like, and that's the difference. Like, you look at Vin Diesel as an actor, look at him in 8. There is range in Dom. Dom is not just like muscle bound, you know, muscle head. He's not that guy at all. Dom is a man of honor. Dom is a man of love. Dom, you know what I mean? No franchise has that to offer other than the fact on this scale, other than the Fast and the Furious franchise right now. And the fans of it, even the ones who don't understand that, have been so loyal despite how much bullshit that they take for liking this franchise. You know what I mean? And now they've made the first one where everything that fans have been like ignoring and defending is they've almost invalidated it with a movie that is not well thought out, with a movie that does not honor the core values of the franchise, with you know what I mean? And now we look like assholes. And no, seriously, like we really do. Like, we have to sit there and say, yeah, we know it's not good, but I just love this franchise. And they're like, well, they're all the same. It's like, no, they're not. They're really not. You know, and I see, like, somebody was pointing out, like, the Halloween trailer that just dropped, and everybody's like, oh, you know, like, I like Halloween just as much as you like Fast and Furious. We could blah, blah, blah. It's like, yeah, but, like, what is Halloween offering?
Right.
You know what I mean? That's why I don't want to see Halloween Kills, because I don't like what they have to offer. I love what Fast and Furious has to offer, and I'm talking beyond the scope of the screen. Mm-hmm. I can watch Fast and Furious 8 at my house and love it. 9, I can't do that with. I just can't.
I mean, you'll see. I mean, you liked it better the second time. So, I mean, it might possibly... there's a lot bad about this movie, but I don't know that it's that bad that we won't maybe look back on it if they kind of course correct a little bit with the next one or two.
But like Rocky 3, it's like there's nothing of value in this one. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, well, especially all the backstory and flashback stuff. None of that adds at all. And we kind of talked about that in Messenger before we started this podcast. Yeah. But none of that adds to the story. It's just there. And
it confused me at first when they I was like, "Who's this kid supposed to be?" And then when they said Dom, I was like, "Where?" Like, you know what I mean? I was like, "What are you talking about?" And then like Jacob, they don't even get that right. Jacob is a foot shorter than Dom. In the flashbacks. What?
I know. that was very glaring issue there.
When I saw Army of the Dead a couple weeks ago, closer to a couple months ago, I thought to myself, why the fuck didn't they cast Batista as his brother?
Right.
And then a week later, I read an article that they did want to and that he turned it down because he was doing a Gears of War thing or something like that. Mm. And I'm like, well, then you just got to wait.
Yeah.
Like, you got to wait it out because, like, not only is Batista more of the type of actor you need for this kind of movie, not only does he look more like Dom, Batista is an incredible actor, actually. Not that Army of the Dead would tell you that because it's so bad. And gives him nothing to do, but he's an actor, and he's Inspector. He's an actor with soul, which is why he's so bad in Blade Runner 2049, because it's like, you can't have him play a robot. He has soul in his eyes. Sorry.
Sure.
It's like, let me get Bill Murray to play a robot. Doesn't work. I just compared Batista to Bill Murray.
That's a first, I think.
Won't be the last.
Well, speaking of John Cena's character, just one quick little thing, and then we'll get to our rankings here. My buddy Josh Bell, who's on the show a lot, brought up John Cena's character and the German guy. Definitely a couple, right?
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense.
I mean, they have to be. They're just a bickering couple the whole time.
They wear the same shoes, I noticed, in one scene.
There you go. I didn't notice that part.
It was right before the worst part of the movie, which is the Cardi B cameo.
Oh, God.
Like, dude, the first time I saw the movie, in that scene where they're in the embassy, I had the thought, much like we were saying a second ago, for the first time, like, I can't stand this, but like maybe one day after the wound is healed of it being a not good entry, I can like learn to love it in some sure. way despite yeah. it. And as soon as I completed that thought in my head, she popped up. And worse than she popped up, they gave her dialogue. And I was like, did you learn nothing from your Iggy Azalea cameo 5 years ago? Like, did you learn nothing, you fools?
They can't help themselves.
The only benefit to John Cena being in this movie is that we have yet another bridge in the Fast and Furious Transformers gap. Ooh. We had Tyrese, and now we got John Cena. That gap is getting you know closer and closer here. And like, I'm in. Like, if they yeah. give me a crossover, I know it sounds silly, but I'm like, dude, if I saw a poster where Dom is sitting on Optimus Prime's shoulder, I would live in a movie theater for 2 months because I wouldn't be able to leave because I'd just keep watching that movie.
Now, you know what do I mean? you prefer a Transformers crossover over a Jurassic World one, I'm assuming?
What are you talking about?
Good answer.
Well, I'm very confused by that, but I will say that the second time I saw it, other than the Cardi B cameo, the next worst thing about F9 was the 5-minute IMAX sneak peek of the new Jurassic World movie,
which I did not get to see. I went to it in Dolby, but
my yeah. buddy turned to me at the end of it and he goes, dude, that was so bad and the CGI was so shitty, I half expected for suddenly there to be a cell phone ringing, and it turned out to be one of those don't talk or text during the movie ads. Like, it's really bad. I will say, I can't remember if I've said this on the show before, but I am fighting. If Justin Lin is going to be taking notes from fans, take one from me, bud, and have the next one be called Past and the Furious.
Ooh,
and it's time yeah. travel.
Like, well, that's actually, wait a minute. My favorite part of this movie is Vin Diesel walking through his memories. That is the best part. So yeah. there you go. There's your setup for your Past and Furious
Well,
movie.
Dude, I'm just saying it worked for X-Men.
Yeah.
Like, that's the best X-Men movie is Days of Future Past.
Uh-huh.
And they retconned every mistake that they had made, like, in a way that earned it.
Yeah.
Which never happens. Like, I saw it with my own eyes, David. When Cyclops reappeared as James Marsden at the end, the audience cheered.
Right,
and I was like, you liars. I was there 10 years ago when you were happy he died. I wasn't because I like Cyclops. But I was like, they earned it. Dude, go back. Unmake Jacob and, like, you know, whatever you need to do. Like, go, fuck it. Like, time travel. It's cool.
Yeah.
You know?
Do it.
People are coming around on Back to the Future 2 these days, you know? Like, and it would be the same kind of thing.
Are they, Joe?
Sure, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of people now who talk about that one's underrated. I mean, that's the only one that I like, personally. But, what is the Avengers? The Avengers went through time, and everybody said it was
they
great.
They did. Yeah. They sure did.
It was better than the last one. Better than
people
Infinity
like
War.
Stuff.
Yeah, right. Time travel. And, but please, if you do the time travel, please de-age them.
Yes.
I can't believe I'm saying that. But, like, de-age
Isn't
them.
Isn't it weird to say that? But that's exactly the thought I had. I was like, this does not work. I mean, Vin Diesel is too damn, like, he's him. Like, you can't get another
right.
actor to do that.
Right. Like, well, the thing is if you get an actor to do it, you have to get an actor.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, because, like, the trick to Dom, like we were saying earlier, is that he's not a meathead or anything. Dom has a soul, and you have to channel. You know who I'm thinking of is Righteous Gemstones, the flashback episode of Righteous Gemstones when they had that kid playing young Danny McBride.
Oh,
he was
so good.
Brilliant. He
so
was
good.
Brilliant because he wasn't being young Danny McBride. You know what I mean? Like, he was playing that character,
yeah.
and he nailed it. And this kid, like, not only does he not look a drip like Vin Diesel, but he doesn't seem like Dom.
Yeah.
He doesn't even seem like a Dom in the making.
No.
You know what I mean? It's whatever.
Let's move on to our rankings.
Well, what did you? Yeah, that's fine.
Joe, let's start with you. I guess let's just, let's have you just do your rankings, and then I'll do mine, but we'll just kind of talk about it a little bit. I think a back and forth is
sounds great.
A little too much. So yeah,
I
let's
agree.
Have you do your full ranking, and then I'll do mine.
And if there's one thing about me, I'm too much.
Yes,
call me heat
yes,
miser.
Yes.
So from bottom to top.
Yes.
We're not counting Hobbs and Shaw. Just get it.
It's the bottom for both of us. So.
I mean, it's not even in the league. Yeah. Like, get out of here. It's minor league. You got 9, and then next I would put 7. The next I would put 3, but with an asterisk, only because it has Sonny Chiba in it. Then next I would do 5.
Okay.
And then I would do 4.
Mm-hmm.
Then I would do 2.
Okay.
Then 6. And then this is hard because it's like flip a coin on any given day and I might change my mind. But I'm going to today, I'm going to say my second favorite is the first. Okay. And my favorite is the 8.
Wow. Okay.
I'm just going to say that today. But yeah, so bottom to top, you've got 9, 7, 3, 5, 4, 2, 6, 1, 8.
All right. That's an interesting rating. I mean, I think having 8 at the top is very, you know, that's controversial a little bit. A lot of people do not like that movie, but that's Joe Black's
show. It's
on
because, well, to me, doing something like 8 is the hardest kind of movie you can make.
Sure.
Like, that's the hardest movie to do.
Yeah.
And 1 is the easiest movie to do.
Mm-hmm.
It's the easiest to fuck up, but it's the easiest movie to do, and they did it perfectly. You know what I mean? But 8, that's like damn near impossible to pull off to the level that they pulled it off.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
All right. Well, I have to have a little caveat here that I did not rewatch 2 and 3 recently. So since the theater. So that makes it a little tough to fit them in the ranking here, and they end up towards the bottom because I got to admit, I am one of those people who, you know, I of course watched the first one in the theaters. I thought it was pretty good. You know, I liked it at the time. Went, saw the second one, did not really like it at the time. Saw the third one, and I was like, okay, I'm done with the series. And then I came back around at 7 is when I finally...
7?
Yeah, 7 is when I was like, oh, I'm in. I finally get this series and why some people like these movies. Went back, loved 5, loved 6, loved 8 once that came out. Yeah. I
mean, that's almost as controversial as me saying 8 is my favorite. 7
I guess
is
so.
The one that got me back.
I guess so. So wow. I have to put 2 and 3 towards the bottom, but with rewatches, maybe they'd raise up a little bit. But because they were part of me kind of, you know, pushing this series to the side, they belong on the bottom for me. Mm-hmm. So with that being said, from 7 on up, we've got F9. 6th place is Fast and Furious, the 4th one. The Fast and Furious, the original, number 5, which is great, but is kind of just, it is what it is. And I like this series for the over-the-topness, you know, so I've got to have the other ones above it. 6, 8, 7, 5 as those top 4. So
wow,
6,
at number
8,
one.
7, 5. 5, you know, and I think I probably would not be alone in putting 5 at the top. I think that is a very popular pick. But in just rewatching these movies recently, I went to most of them at the Fast Fridays or whatever, the Friday screenings. It is so damn fun, especially in the theater. And I have to go with the flow and keep that as my number one.
My only problem with 5 is that I don't really like heist movies just in general.
Sure.
And I don't like that there are no personal stakes in 5. Really.
That makes sense.
Like it's. You know, I love the interpersonal element of like Letty in 6, you know what I mean? Of like Elena and Dom's son in 8, of, you know, I even like Shaw as the catalyst for 7. Like I that kind of stuff is what I, you know, cling to. 1 though is really fascinating because I think that 1, there are some movies that are like very of their time.
Yeah.
And then there are certain movies that define their time.
Sure.
Like honestly, like, and if we're talking musically, like Prince, for example, there's 80s artists and then there's Prince.
Sure.
Prince defined the 80s.
Yeah.
You know, but he is pure 80s. You know what I mean? But Fast and the Furious, that was the summer blockbuster of that era.
Sure.
That is the PG-13 summer action movie. That is definitive of what it was like in that 5-year little window there.
Yeah.
You know, much like Jackass is definitive of the comedy of the time. Much, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And so I think that, like, again, it's so high on my list, A, because I was of the time for that movie. You know, I was 14 when that came out.
Yeah.
But when I look back on it now, it means so much to me that I can look back at a movie that I loved so much at 14 and not feel any kind of shame, resentment, embarrassment.
Sure.
Or, and in fact, knowing that as a fucking 33-year-old adult, if I saw it for the first time, I'd go, that's a damn good movie.
Sure.
Like,
sure.
You know, this stupid little PG-13 racer movie is, you know, it's excellent.
Yeah. No, I absolutely love my top five. All five of those movies are just fantastic for their own reasons. And by the way, one other thing about five is I think that that whole ending, you know, scene with the safe is probably the single best set piece in the series as far as I'm concerned.
That's an interesting question. I didn't think of that going into this. I normally try to, like, anticipate curveballs that you'll throw.
Okay.
Like, what is the best set piece in all of... I mean, like, honestly, I know that I keep going back to it, but, like, the finale of 8 with that fucking submarine...
That's awesome. It's awesome.
It's so, so good.
When they all block the fire.
Yeah! I mean, incredible. But I buy it. Yeah, I buy it. Like, yeah, that's the whole thematic content of the franchise coming together in one moment. But like, it almost feels like cheating saying that one, because you've got like the submarine simultaneously with the airplane, but the airplane, what happens there fits in with the submarine, fits in with, you know what I mean? It's such a phenomenally orchestrated F. Gary Gray, dude. He is so underrated.
Yeah, like, he's good.
Like, I went back and watched Friday for the first time in a decade. And man, what an incredible movie. It's amateur as hell, but like has such like intelligence behind it and such like, it's so believable. It's so, so real, you know?
It's got a point of view.
Right. And Set It Off. Set It Off is another one that like somehow the world just completely forgot about that movie. And like, everyone's like, Widows was, you know, the best. I'm like, yeah, okay. I saw that movie 15 years ago. It was called Set It Off and it was better in every way. I said the same thing though, when I saw Heat for the first time 5 years ago, everyone's been telling me my whole life, Heat, Heat, Heat. And I saw Heat and I was like, okay, you know what Heat doesn't have? Lesbian Queen Latifah. Like, Set It Off, that's a movie.
Maybe Lesbian Queen Latifah would be a good addition to the Fast and Furious series.
Dude. That's, dude, Taxi. I mean, have you seen it? It's great. Like, it's like, we know that she can be believable behind the wheel. We know that she could stand up to like all, dude, you've just saved the franchise. Between your idea of Queen Latifah and mine of Fast and the Furious.
Yes.
Like, holy shit.
Yeah. I feel like we're re-energized right now.
That's why this is your show, man. That's why this is your show. Like that's holy cannoli.
Oh boy. Well, Joe, is there another movie you watched recently you'd like to recommend to our listeners?
Oh yeah, there is actually. I just recently saw, it's on HBO Max. It's one of those movies that's been staring me in the face. The Pallbearer.
Have I seen that?
With David Schwimmer. Written and directed by Matt Reeves. It was the last movie he made for over a decade before coming back with Cloverfield. It is billed as a rom-com between David Schwimmer and Gwyneth Paltrow, and it could not be further from the truth. The premise for the film is David Schwimmer is an architect, or an aspiring architect, out of college about a year, still lives with his mom, looking for work, life going nowhere. And he gets a phone call from some random woman saying that his childhood best friend committed suicide. And David Schwimmer has no idea who she's talking about. But he feels so bad for her that he goes along with it. Right? Because he feels so bad for this woman. And he ends up getting roped into being the pallbearer at this guy's funeral. Mm-hmm. Now, they sell that as like the premise. But really, that's the setup. Because the funeral takes place 25 minutes into the movie. The movie is actually a coming-of-age film and is actually about him and the mother, played by Barbara Hershey.
Okay.
And it's more The Graduate than anything else. It's a very
gotcha.
It's not dark. It's kind of a melancholy. It's actually, you would really love it with your Charlie Kaufman affection.
Yeah,
but
sure,
you might not like it because it doesn't end shittily like all of his movies. but like it is such a but like I meant shittily in sadness, not quality. It is full of such rich performances. One thing that most movies are missing these days is that, like, even your smallest character needs to have a rich performance, even if it's the janitor in the background. Everyone, Michael Rapaport pops up in this movie. Toni Collette pops up in this movie. You know what I mean? It's so
Carol Kane.
She plays his mom, and she's got 10 lines, and they're brilliant. And Gwyneth Paltrow, who I've always defended, I'm one of those people that thinks the right movie won Best Picture in 98, you know, like Shakespeare in Love, like that was better than Saving Private Ryan, fight me. This movie, it's really, really wonderful.
Awesome. I feel like I watched it back when it first came out, and I do not remember it. Maybe I'll have to check it out sometime soon. Another movie you recently recommended on another episode was Fool's Gold, which I did just recently watch on your recommendation. What a weird movie, but
it's a hoot.
Yeah.
It's a hoot.
How about that?
I mean, this is two different sides of me, David. That's two different sides of me, but like, you know,
I understand it. It's all movies. I get what you're doing.
That'd be like if I recommended Good Burger 1 month and then, you know, the next month I recommend Godard's Made in USA.
Sure.
I also do need to throw in, because John Singleton's Shaft, his Shaft remake.
Oh, you've been on a Shaft like tear lately, huh?
Just going through that movie, dude. I just keep watching it over and over again. And I mean, he did Too Fast, Too Furious. And in fact, when he died, a bunch of buddies and I, the night he died, my buddy works at a theater, and after hours, we just popped in and did a double feature of Shaft and Too Fast, Too Furious.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, John Singleton as an action director, very underrated. Very underrated. He did three great action movies in a row. You got Too Fast, Too Furious. Well, Shaft, Too Fast, Too Furious, and Four Brothers. And
oh, yeah, I like that movie a lot.
Yeah, they're just so rich. Dude, go back and watch Too Fast, Too Furious.
Yeah,
its spirit is so pure, and there's no... There's little subtle things about his movies that no other movie does. You know what I mean? Like his camera work in Shaft, it seems normal, but it's really fucking not. You know what I mean? Same thing with Too Fast, Too Furious. Like, it seems like all the others, but when you watch it, no other movie feels like Too Fast, Too Furious. And
sure.
Yeah. So yes, my two are The Pallbearer and Shaft, the 2000.
There you go.
But what about you? Like, I mean, other than the fact that you're recommending Fool's Gold to everybody, you throw out a recommendation.
Yeah, right?
I just want to hear what you're watching.
What am I watching? Oh, man. You know what I just watched? I wonder your take on this. I just watched Three Amigos for a guest appearance on another podcast. Mm-hmm. Big fan of that one, Joe?
Every movie I do, I give a special thanks to John Landis.
There you go.
Steve Martin is my favorite writer of all time. I love the Three Amigos.
Yeah, it was fun. That's something I hadn't watched in decades, like at least 20 years, and it was fun revisiting that. What a movie.
It's so funny, because that movie is John Landis purely on autopilot, and it's a classic. He actually told me once that that's his favorite script, or that's his favorite movie of his that he's ever made, is Three Amigos. He also, in the same conversation, told me that his favorite script he ever got to direct was The Stupids, which I can agree with that. My first movie I made out of film school, every morning before we started shooting, I made the whole cast and crew sit down and watch 8 minutes of The Stupids. and by the end, you know, we'd finish it. I love that movie. But yeah, Three Amigos is wonderful. It's a sweater. It's so awesome.
So great. Well, Joe, why don't you tell people about you and your filmmaking and what you got going on?
Oh, I'm finally wrapping up my newest film, Natasha Hall, my 14th feature. By some, I would say all who have seen it would call it my best. Still not my favorite yet, but maybe it will be my favorite. Still Low Town for anybody out there. But Natasha Hall, it's premiering here in LA. We're doing a screening of it on July 29th. We're going to have like tickets available for it. And I'm hoping to screen it in Vegas and in Denver and in New Orleans and Jacksonville, Florida right now. Like, that's, I'm just going to be touring with that for the rest of the year. It's a female detective movie set in 1990. It's kind of like an Inherent Vice, Jackie Brown mishmash. It features some brilliant voice work by none other than David Rosen.
That's right.
Who basically shares a scene with people like Dwayne Whitaker from Pulp Fiction fame and stuff like that. So we made it during the pandemic. It was a tough shoot. It's a weird movie, but it seems to really be getting through to people. Cause I screen my movies to see, you know, what people are to gauge, but not like to everybody, just like a core group. And
sure.
We've really got something on our hands here and I'm really excited to start showing it to people. And you can find all of my other films other than Natasha Hall on my website, which is bluemeanspregnantfilms.com. All of my films, my features, my shorts, documentaries on the making of my films, it's all on there for free. You can just stream it right there on the website. And I'll keep everyone posted on if we screen Natasha Hall in their hometown.
Awesome. Well, Joe, as always, always have fun when you're on the show. So thank you for joining me. And I'm very curious to see what the next thing we cover will be, but hopefully we'll get you back again sometime soon.
Yeah, it sounds great. Hopefully it'll have a budget of less than, you know, $200 million. That'll be...
That sounds like a good plan.
Hey, Jason.
Hey, Al. That was very aggressive of you.
Yeah, people keep asking me, what is our podcast? What is Food and Loathing? Do you know?
We have a podcast, I know that much, and it's about food, and there's also going to be some loathing.
Yeah, the food and the loathing. I mean, come on, it's a reference to the great Hunter S. Thompson, man, and there's nobody who knew how to explore Las Vegas better than Hunter S. Thompson. So even though we are two food journalists, it's really important to me that we dig deep into this city. We not only go into the kitchens and the dining rooms and the bars and the cocktail lounges, but we also hit the strip clubs, and then we hit the dispensaries, and we do the dive bars and the places that sell puke insurance. So I want us to loathe in the best possible way on this city that I love.
We're going to go to the restaurants that make this scene tick. We're going to talk to the chefs, the food personalities, all the movers and shakers in Vegas, and we're going to try to find what's going on the underground scene.
So that is Food and Loathing.
So subscribe to Food and Loathing wherever you get your podcasts, and taste Las Vegas with us.
All right, so hopefully you guys enjoyed that conversation about F9 with our guest Joe Black. Thanks to Joe for joining me on that one. It was so much fun to get to talk about the Fast and Furious movies. It was so much fun getting to reconnect with these movies over the last few weeks. If you follow me over on Letterboxd, which I never plug my Letterboxd, but you should follow me on Letterboxd. My account's actually by David Rosen because it's a personal account. So check that out. But yeah, I've been catching up on all these Fast and Furious movies. Part of the whole Fast Fridays thing that they were doing, I was going to the theater for most of them, and some of them I watched at home. But yeah, it was just so much fun getting reconnected with these movies. They're a blast. I love them so much. One thing we were talking about after we finished recording, after we hit stop, so it wasn't part of the main conversation, but I just wanted to talk about it for a second here. Ludacris, is there another actor any of you can think of that has been in such huge movies, but just one series? It's like insane. He hasn't been in anything else, just the biggest franchise ever, like other than the Marvel Cinematic Universe. It's absolutely crazy, this weird acting career he has had. Obviously, he's got his music career too, but it's almost like he's just making these billion-dollar movies, and then his agent calls him and is like, you know, hey, I got this for you. And he's like, no, I'm good. I'm Fast and Furious. That's good enough for me. I don't know. Anyway, just a thought. If anybody could think of anybody else in that kind of position other than Ludacris, let me know. I'd be curious to know who you could think of. But yeah, that does it for today's episode on F9. As always, make sure you're subscribed to Piecing It Together. We have so many episodes coming your way. We've got one coming up on Censor. We've got our July trailer roundup. We also have a top 10 of the year so far special episode. I always do that with Josh Bell from Awesome Movie Year. That is coming up next week. And of course, lots of other movies to cover. So there's a lot of podcasts coming your way, so make sure you're subscribed. You can also follow us on social media at Piecing Pod. Join in the conversation over in our Facebook group, Popcorn and Puzzle Pieces. And don't forget, we also have a Patreon, the Produced by David Rosen Patreon, where I combine content from Piecing It Together, from Awesome Movie Year, which I produce, and also from my music career. Lots of great content over there, so check it out. It's patreon.com. patreon.com/bydavidrosen combines all of the stuff that I work on into one big, awesome Patreon with lots of great content. So check it out. So that does it for today. Let's close this thing out with a piece of music like I always do. And I was trying to think of a good, like, upbeat track for a Fast and Furious type movie that I could play. But actually, I was thinking about, there's always a lot of rap songs on these soundtracks. It's kind of whatever the moment is in hip hop is kind of what soundtracks these movies always. So I figured I would dig into the album success stories from the rapper Skydro, who I produced almost like 10 years ago at this point. But every once in a while, I'll throw one of his songs into the end of these episodes. And I figured the track Crash and Burn would fit in with Fast and Furious. So I may have played this on the show before, but it's a good track. I like this song a lot. So I hope you enjoy it. This is Crash and Burn from Skydro's album Success Stories, which is available on iTunes and Spotify and all those places. So go check out the rest of the album if you like the song. We'll be back with more Piecing It Together coming up real soon.
I want gold Dayton, shine like a crown. It's through the west coast, we're gold strong. We young with instrument, the drum, the beat, the sound. A couple feet for making six guys, so next to get the coffee lottery. So what you wanna do? 6 million ways is not the few. Choose one for understand, not a fashion, it's my cool. The bricks like why I carry charge, and if the whole of them shot, we execute, there is some by the truck. Crash and burn, I know the table ever turned. It's the beat by the street and the way crash. Crash and burn, got all the table ever turned. This to be by the street, and the quake crash and burn. It's like burning, 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 burning. Ay, as I hit the curb, hit the ties, watch my music. Hear the rubbers then burn. Ay, crash and burn, got all the table ever turned. This to be by the street, and the quake crash and burn. Crash and burn, got all the table ever turned. This to be by the street, and the quake crash and burn. Crash and burn, and all the table ever turned. It's the beat by the streets on the quaint question. Crash and burn, and all the table ever turned. It's the beat by the streets on the quaint question. It's like this diversity and your great crash and burn. They say it's burning, burn. Yo, this unity and your great crash and burn. Watch the tables, them a turn.
All Points West production, produced by David Rosen in Las Vegas.